And I remember one year, early on in the lectionary cycle, Matthew 25 had come up. And so as I'm reflecting on that, I said, you know, definitely we can see Christ the King in the poor, the hungry, the naked, but I don't know so much about those in jail. I'd actually written that. And so God has a really funny sense of humor and said, come see me there too.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith. This week, we're speaking with Kathleen Messina, who is both a spiritual director and a chaplain, and she's going to call us to answer some calls, I think. Heather Bigley is our senior producer here in studio.
Hello.
And also James Sturdivant.
Hello, hello. I think one of those significant calls is this invitation from God to come see me there too. I think that's something we should all consider as we listen to the entire episode. Where are the places God is inviting me to see him?
Kathleen is the director of the Spiritual Direction Institute, part of the Emmaus Spirituality Center in Houston, Texas. And she also works as a chaplain at Harris County Jail. Houston is the fourth largest city in the U.S. I think it's kind of underrepresented in media, generally speaking. So I was delighted that we got to speak with her. I also used to live in Houston for 6 years. So
really, I've never heard
you've never you heard talk any about... stories about that, have you?
So Kathleen goes on a journey herself. And one thing I really like is she's going to remind me that as an adult, there is a need and even a call for us to develop spiritually. So I started by asking her about being a spiritual director.
Yes, you know, in a formal sense, I was not familiar with it at all until the last 15 or 16 years. I'd certainly visited with my priests at time to time when I was going through things, but I wasn't aware of it as a ministry, and certainly one that lay people participated in. But when I moved here to Missouri City, a new parish was being formed, and the pastor at the time was very interested in making spiritual direction available in this new parish. And so he would see me at daily mass and from time to time would ask me, what are you going to do around here? And I kept ducking him. And then eventually he said to me, really, I would like you to consider formation as a spiritual director. And so that was really the beginning of all of this.
For our listeners who aren't Catholic, how would you describe formation?
Formation is, well, another word that probably wouldn't make sense. It's more than just teaching. So I was going to say catechesis. It involves a change in the whole person, a transformation. So we are formed, not just trained, for example.
So you started thinking about this. I might actually do what he says. And then what happened?
It was quite a shift for me. I'd had a career in community and economic development for years, and I was already a grandmother. So it was a serious consideration to enter 3 years of formation at the Spiritual Direction Institute. And at the same time, I also went back to Fordham University in New York to receive a master's from their Graduate School of Religion. It grew into something that was really attracting me, first for myself, because it opened this whole new world to me, and I just loved the learning, the training, and it became a real call then.
For lots of us who are lay people, we open the scripture, we go to our services, we try and serve where we can, and obviously we're trying to be like Jesus and follow what he taught, what we've been asked, and that's kind of our religious life. But the idea of an academic aspect to that, like where you go and study more, what did that add to your spiritual life?
It just added such great depth. There was a whole world out of there that then opened up, in a sense, explanations to things I felt or saw about God and experience that no one in the pulpit had ever talked about. It opened up the whole idea of even getting away, going on a retreat. That wasn't something I'd done since high school, and I didn't know adults did that. And so it really did deepen my relationship with the Lord into something that became less of a performance, right, into a joy and a relationship and a friendship.
Well, that sounds how faith should be.
Right.
Less
right.
of the checklist and more of something that builds yes. our spirits, even in difficult moments. Then you went on to become a chaplain.
Yes.
Was that basically the same work under a different name, or is it a different thing?
It's certainly in the same family, I would say. And I arrived at that quite unexpectedly as well. I had been involved, obviously, in a lot of ministries, and then I had some disappointments and decided it was time for a retreat. And at that time, I wasn't seeking anything. I just wanted to rest with the Lord, maybe lick my wounds, you know, like we sometimes need to do. And then it came to me, come to the jail. And it was preposterous sounding to me. It was just so unexpected. I, in one sense, had been always very involved in concern and ministry to the poor and marginalized. And I had a weekly bulletin column that was an explanation of the Sunday scriptures that I did for about 14 years at St. Angela's. And I remember one year, early on in the lectionary cycle, Matthew 25 had come up. And so as I'm reflecting on that, I said, you know, definitely we can see Christ the King in the poor, the hungry, the naked, but I don't know so much about those in jail. I'd actually written that. And so God has a really funny sense of humor and said, come see me there too. And so I brought it to my spiritual director. She said, you know, you want to stick with that for a while. And I did. And eventually found my way to the Archdiocesan Office of Correctional Ministries and began serving as a chaplain in the Harris County Jail in 2013.
I think you just said something hugely important, which is, so Matthew 25, famous chapter where Jesus says, blessed are those who fed me, who clothed me, who visited me and right. saw me in prison. And when did we see thee? When you did it unto one of the least of these. And then the flip side, when did we not do those things? That idea of learning to see Jesus in other people, what has that meant to you? How do you see Jesus in the people that you minister to or work with?
Two things I probably want to say about that, Steve. The first is part of the spiritual journey is to, first of all, recognize that Christ dwells within me. Mm. So if I come to that place in my faith and my appreciation for Christ's presence in me, then it's even possible to believe that Christ dwells in others. Forget about the jail. Just the relative I'm angry at, or the person who has slighted me, or the minister who forgets my name, or any of those kinds of things. And then, of course, in addition to those who are mentioned in Matthew 25. But those can also, you know, be spiritualized to the very people who are right in front of our face.
When you think of young Kathleen as a child growing up, figuring out, do I believe all of these things I'm being taught? Are you surprised where you have ended up? Or would she be surprised?
Actually, not so much. As a little girl, I am Roman Catholic, and I was raised in a Catholic family. So our Catholicism was our religion, our faith, our culture. I went to Catholic school. So this is in the late 1950s. We had a catechism. And the first question in the catechism is, why did God make me? Mm-hmm. God made me to know, love, and serve him in this world. God made me. That's a very personal experience. And so now, how do I know, love, and serve him in this world? So in my, you know, very young child, it was always part of my thinking, part of how I tried to respond to life circumstances. I was really fortunate in Catholic school that I had religious sisters who allowed me, in particular, to ask questions. I remember one day, this is in the fifth grade, Sister Jean Mary got a little weary. She said to me, Kathleen, I'm starting to think you're a doubting Thomas. Well, that did not sound good to fifth grader Kathleen. So I go, oh, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. And what was so fascinating about that is at lunchtime, I'm in line to go into the cafeteria. And this little sister comes up to me and she pulls me out of the line. She said, I am so sorry that I said that. you can ask anything you want whenever you want. And so that's always given me a lot of freedom in my exploration of faith to be unafraid of my questions and my doubts and to give them room. And within that, when I had that kind of freedom, I didn't, like many, ever have a period. I had periods where I'm certainly angry at God or frustrated, wondering where God is. But I never said, I'm done with God or I'm done with the church. I never had that kind of an experience.
In your life since, are there experiences or events that have become touchstones to you, like, this has confirmed my belief in the reality of the divine?
What comes to my mind is, in the middle of all this formation that I was going through, I also got cancer. Mm. And it was a very serious cancer with a very poor prognosis. And at the time, I discovered that time to be my closest time ever with the Lord. I had gone into it quite surprised I was sick. I didn't anticipate that at all. And I was not afraid of death, because as I reflected on my life at the time, I said, well, all my relationships are in pretty good shape, so I think I'm good to go. And it was a very long and difficult haul for me and for my family and for all those who love me. And God's faithfulness in that and in other really challenging times have certainly reassured me that there is a God, and that I can trust this God.
So you find yourself later in a prison ministry, meeting the people that you had once written, I was 50-50, right. I'm on the fence about these folks. Right. But has it helped that you've been through a few things, like cancer?
Yes, our suffering in whatever form that it takes helps us in standing alongside others who suffer, regardless of the reason. And the fact that I grew up in a loving family and I have felt love, it helps me be unafraid to share that love and to not be afraid, but to have such compassion for those whose lives have been lacking in so many ways, and to be compassionate and empathetic with where they find themselves. And I minister to women, right? So although there are 10,000 people in Harris County Jail, it's the third largest in the country, only about 1,100 are women. And if you're there, you're there for a really serious aggravated offense. In all the cases where I minister, I'm bringing myself. That's the first thing. And hopefully a self who is enough self-emptied that I can provide a holding place for other people's stories, their situations, and so forth. So it's really to make room for them. And in some sense, the questions that seekers pose, whether they're in the jail or anywhere, really have a universality to them, as well as a very significant particularity. So they are concerned, in my case with the women, they're concerned about, you know, how their children are.
Right.
How did I end up here? What's going to happen next? Does God see me? Those are questions that really transcend location.
It sounds like, despite circumstances, people are people.
Yes, yeah.
Are there times you have felt inspired?
I am inspired by the resiliency that sometimes rises to the surface, particularly in the people that I've been with so very long. Mm-hmm. To give you an example, a young woman named Alita was arrested after a gang shooting. And so she was 17 years old when she came into the jail and pregnant. And while there, she gave birth. And fortunately, her parents took the child. So that was quite a blessing. When Alita came in, she was very combative, but began to slow down. And that's what people often do. And boy, the world needs to slow down. But I get to observe it in the jail. And she was forced to do that because she actually, after she gave birth, she was put in solitary confinement for the next 4.5 years, where she would only have 1 hour out of her cell a day. And it would be at a random hour. So in all that time when I would visit her and I would bring her Holy Communion, I would talk through a little window in a metal door. I would give her Holy Communion. I would have to slide that through the crack and her fingers would meet mine to take it. That was, in one sense, the ridiculous distance between us, but also generated incredible closeness. And so all through that time, as she tried to make sense of what she was doing there, I saw this huge transformation where by the time that she got out, after having been there for 5 years, she emerged as a woman of great faith who believed God was not punishing her there, but protecting her from herself, not just from the gang activity, but from herself and her inclinations of rebellion. She grew to love her parents. Her only desire was to raise her child, whom she named Genesis. And so that's inspiring to me about the ability to hold still long enough to let God work in me. You know, we talk about St. John's dark night of the soul. So often we want to get out of the darkness, to just let God work on us and to cooperate with that work. I mean, there's grace and then there's the acceptance of it. And so she had a receptivity to that grace and just emerged a different person, a different mother, a different daughter.
Wow. To cooperate with that work. That can be a difficult choice, it would seem to me. Did you have some of that in your time with cancer? Because I'm assuming it involved pain and treatments and just a total disruption of your usual life.
Actually, Steve, not so much there because, as I say, I was in a good place to enter that and to try to be a witness for Christ in that illness with my family and among our community. It was still a very small parish, and the people, it raised questions for them. How could she get cancer? Why would God do that to her? That's not where I was in my faith. But I have experienced it in situations where I've really entered in a period of being deeply misjudged or misunderstood. When I was a young woman, I worked for Catholic Charities. I was the director of advancement in the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut, and I got fired. It threw me into a deep darkness because I felt I'm with the Lord. I'm doing the Lord's work. So how could I be removed from that job? And it really led me into a deep questioning about the authorities in the church and their priorities. It led me into a lot of reflection about, well, what am I called to do here or not? It did not take a long time, but it was an excruciatingly painful time as I tried to just see what God had planned for me next.
You're listening to In Good Faith. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Welcome back to In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry, and I'm speaking with Kathleen Messina, a spiritual director and chaplain at Harris County Jail. There are so many people in the Houston area. It's just gigantic, and there are people of all different faiths, all different traditions. So when you are being a chaplain, what is it that you bring as a spiritual resource as a chaplain to all of those people?
Well, to begin with, when I enter a pod or a tank, as it's commonly conceived, I invite everyone to come pray. I don't say, oh, can the Catholics come over now? And so Everyone is invited. People are just welcome in the tank or in the pod. And so it will be predominantly Christian faiths. You know, we're here in Texas, and that's pretty overwhelming in this area, but certainly from a wide variety of traditions. And I don't find that I have to promote my faith, nor do I have to hide it. I'm certainly not there to convert anyone.
In working with people in spiritual direction, and this may apply in chaplaincy as well, Are there some categories of things or ways of thinking that block us from becoming spiritually connected? Maybe we hold ourselves back.
Because of the joy that I receive through my own relationship with God and I see in others, it is a question that I wonder about, in particular because we know that we are created and exist in relationship. So why do we avoid the one that would be most life-giving, our relationship with God. Unless we have experienced God, you're going to give up on faith because it's just going to be a head trip. So while I think that religious doctrine and the catechesis that we do, that's not what convinced the followers of Jesus. He did teach them, but they followed him to his death, more or less, and certainly after his resurrection and ascension, they went to their own martyrdom, but by the conviction of their experience of Jesus. So the question for me becomes, how do we help people with that experience? And I think also we have a distorted idea about freedom, and we're so rooted in individualism. And I think that leads us to rebel against the invitations of God, of getting closer to him. Instead of drawing closer, connecting, people have other substitutes. A lot of people are afraid of what, if they get close to the Lord, what will that demand? So that's why there's this epidemic of loneliness and anxiety and fear and anger and competitiveness that's just so not of God. So I ask myself, what can we do to reach those people? When people first come to me for spiritual direction, one of the things I will say to them is, what brings you here now? And so often something will come up. They have finally this desire for more than they have. Other things have failed them and they want more. They want the relationship with God. And so that will bring people to spiritual direction. But we would hope that others who haven't yet reached that would be inspired to identify the deeper hunger, the deeper desire that they have. Again, wherever we go, whatever we do, we want to love others as we've been loved. I just came from 4 days away with my siblings. There are 7 of us still living, and our spouses went on a little trip, and we live all over the country. And so on Sunday, we gathered. Mass wasn't available where we are, but we gathered and we took time to express our gratitude for all those who had come before us, all those whose lives had impacted us, the love that we had received that helped us become the people who we are. You know, if we can get in touch with that gratitude, it's so helpful. Instead of trying to acquire, be grateful for what we have. I think at times can get a little weary wondering what separates so many people from God and how beneficial that would be for the world. And I tell myself, I'm not going to give up. I'm just going to remain steadfast. And I often just take my mind to a place in the second letter of Peter, where it says that the Lord's patience is directed towards salvation. So I know this will not be over until we are all one, that there is no division between our faiths or between families or between. The Lord has said there is one group and I am not going to lose anyone. So I leave it to him and do what I can.
That was Kathleen Messina speaking about spiritual direction and chaplaincy. Something that I really appreciate is this idea of God inviting her to come and see him in the people at the jail. But then she also talks about spiritualizing that out to the people around us, not just to the marginalized people, not just to the people that, oh, we can psych ourselves up or hype ourselves up to be like, oh, I can be the good guy and love those people or minister to the people who suffer or who everyone thinks is a bad person. But we can look at the people that annoy us or the people that treat us unfairly in really tiny ways. I like to think God plays a very active role in my life, that anytime I feel annoyance or anger, that might be God inviting me to take a closer look and see him in that situation
too. Yeah, come and see me here too.
Yeah. I'm still thinking about this young woman who is in solitary confinement for over 4 years.
Yeah.
From 17 to 21. I cannot imagine a place where God is needed more than to be locked away from any people and to only have this one random hour a day to connect with other humans. that has got to be a brutal experience to survive. And the idea that that woman came out of that experience not as a feral person, but as a woman of faith, that says to me that God can work miracles in all of our lives.
Just hearing a story like that and knowing those things exist is a slap in the face, a wake up.
And so when we're called to visit those in prison.
Yeah, even for her, just her
that's
moment.
That's not a metaphor.
No, her moment of handing Holy Communion through a little slot to this woman.
Right.
It became so, I was like one of her only human contacts. And I couldn't help but wonder about how sometimes we might put ourselves, I can't even really compare these in scale, but in our own spiritual solitary, if we withdraw from the chance, as you were saying, James, to reach out to the annoying person or the person we just are a little nervous to go up to or whoever it might be, learning to see Jesus, as she puts it, in others. The whole Matthew 25 thing, that was very meaningful to me.
Yeah, I mean, again, I was touched by the simplicity of Kathleen saying, I experienced love, and so I know how to go into places and love people. It reminded me of a time when I had a calling where I was to go to the state hospital here in Provo. I was just to attend the state hospital, which is a prison. My job was to go and go into the prison and say, would anyone like to go to church? And then walk them over to the building where church was. And I remember sitting next to people who were withdrawn or were sobbing. They were having all these different emotional experiences. And I wasn't sure what to do. But I had a very clear memory of a good friend of mine earlier that semester reaching out and giving me a hug when I was feeling broken. And I thought, oh, well, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to reach out and hug this person. And I'm not a hugger, folks. And I did that side hug thing and gave a squeeze to the woman next to me and felt confirmed that, yeah, you could do more of that. That's what we need you to be doing right here.
So there's a little bit of spiritual direction you got from just a hug and then we're able to pass on.
Yeah.
Many thanks to Kathleen Messina for speaking with us. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley and Josh Orton. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katarina Martinic, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and Lauren Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. We hope you'll give us a review or a comment at YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and spread the word if you think interfaith understanding could do good things in the world. Find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, Instagram and Facebook, InGoodFaithPodcast, and our YouTube channel is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon right here in Good Faith.